today, firing up the Retro Rockets for a look back on one of Italian football's biggest, most influential, most controversial figures of the last half century. Stop blushing, Gabriele. It's the story of Arrigo Sacchi. Plus, we round up Serie A's 37-goal weekend. Hello, Gabriele Marcotti.
Hello.
Hello, James Horncastle.
Hello, James.
And hello, 1987. It is spring and a season at the tail end of the 80s, and mighty Milan had just been beaten in the cup for the second time that season by a tiny second division team called Parma. Silvio Berlusconi, one of the most powerful men in Italy, has a solution. He approaches Parma's manager, a slight balding former shoe salesman, and hands him the keys to AC Milan. At the time, it was one of the most surprising appointments ever. What followed? 4 years that revolutionised the game in Italy and beyond, and made Sacchi one of the most famous managers in the world. Nice choice of music today, Gab. A little bit of Vasco there.
Thank you. I was wondering, actually, like, who would be the antithesis, sort of in terms of personality, of Arrigo Sacchi in terms of Italian celebrities, and it would probably be Vasco, who's the epitome of the aging rocker. He's kind of all the Rolling Stones rolled into one for
right.
us.
Okay, Vasco, the guy who goes beyond the rules, the hairy, the devil may care. Sacchi, very much the hairless nerd of calcio. So many questions about him. What did he actually do? Did he really revolutionise Italian football? And also, why, if he was so brilliant, did his kind of golden period last so very briefly? But a little bit of background on Arrigoni, il Pelato, il professore di Fusignano, James. How much do you know about his life before Milan?
Well, he started coaching when he was 31. He's from a small village called Fusignano. He mm-hmm. coached that team, but family background. His dad had a stake in a couple of shoe factories. He worked on the commercial side of that business.
He was a travelling salesman. He used to tool around in a Porsche with these kind of massive 80s sunglasses pushed up over his forehead.
Yeah, which he would continue to wear when he was manager of Parma and AC Milan, those aviators.
He's born on April Fool's Day, make of that what you will, in Fusignano. Dad has the shoe factory. He leaves school without qualifications, Sacchi. He was a bit of a failure as a footballer, but after he takes over Fusignano with partners, becomes quite a success as manager.
At that point, mm-hmm. but the fact that he left without qualifications, when I pointed it out to him, you know what he said? What
did he say?
He says, Bill Gates dropped out of Harvard.
Well, he did have some connections which could basically help him get into football because I think when the Sacchi family used to go on holiday in Milano Marittima, there was the owner of Cesena who I think lived next door or essentially rented the place next door. They got to know each other. He knew of Sacchi's passion for football and essentially had the kind of contacts to get him onto his supercorso at Coverciano,
where he met Italo Allodi.
This is, I think, one of the reasons why Maurizio Sarri for a long time went undiscovered, if you like, because he could not get onto a Coverciano course because he just didn't have the requisite contacts. So it took him ages. That's why he kind of really did go from bottom to top, whereas Sacchi had, for a long time, the guy who basically got him his foot in the door was a pre-Moggi figure in Italo Allodi, who kind of taught Moggi everything he needed to know, and, you know, would place him at Cesena's youth team, Fiorentina's youth team, and all this sort of thing.
And then on to Rimini, where he did well enough to then get the job at Parma. And it's at Parma that on the 3rd of September 1986... he takes this side, which had been in Serie C just a couple of seasons before, he'd brought them up, to San Siro in the cup and beats Milan 1-0 and then repeats that later on that same season, because they had a weird Coppa Italia system, they had groups and then knockouts.
Bilanciata la difesa di Milan, Fontolan vi passa, poi tocca in qualche modo sul recupero, nulla di fatto, c'è la rete di Fontolan.
And Berlusconi thinks, wow, this strange young track-suited figure is exactly the man I need to whip this superstar lineup. He's just about to bring in Van Basten and Hullet. I bet they'll listen to this shoe salesman from Fusignano. Gab, how much of a surprise was it when Sacchi got the job?
I mean, to some degree in Italy, we have a little tradition of clubs thinking they're very clever and getting... We have a big tradition of, like, you know, the tactician manager.
Right.
The il mago, as we call it, you know, the magician. Because we think that tactics win games. And there was a string before and after Sacchi, right? I mean, I remember... You know, Orrico got the job at Inter, Marchesi, weirdly, at Juventus.
You said Maifredi as well?
Gigi Maifredi is the other, you know, Mr. Champagne.
And can you add Malassani and then more recently Sarri into that same category? As figures who don't really have a background in the game who then get top-flight jobs and...
Well, some of those guys I mentioned did have backgrounds in the game, but I'm saying they like did something in a small club and then moved up to a big club very quickly. They're more willing to go and take gambles that way. Malizani certainly would fall in the category, as you said, of the people who did not have that background in football. But it was very much in keeping with Berlusconi, right? This is before Berlusconi had entered politics. And I know it's hard for people to fully understand this. But back then, other than people who had a major issue with consumerism, Berlusconi really fit the 80s. And he was likable. He didn't get into politics. He didn't speak out on that. I think the sense with some people was... It doesn't matter whether Sacchi can do anything because I'm Silvio and I'm just going to fix it if he screws up.
My name's Joe and I secretly recorded my boyfriend.
I don't know any names of women that are good looking.
I'm not joking. He really doesn't know about this.
Look, Tom Cruise is a good looking bloke.
Any closer to home?
Closer to home.
Join me and my two friends every week as we share far too much about our personal lives.
One of the first things him saying to me is that I'm not like other girls that he's been with.
That's great.
They were naturally pretty, whereas you do look better with makeup on.
Oh, my days.
Search I Secretly Recorded My Boyfriend wherever you get your podcasts and tell everyone. Just don't tell him.
You?
Yeah, me.
No, you're on about pretty as in pretty.
So let's now hear what was what we would now definitely call Sacchi ball. So he arrives at Milan, wins the Scudetto in his first year. They hadn't won a title in 9 years. They then won back-to-back European titles, which until Real Madrid made it kind of normal, was unheard of. And they, it is said, revolutionised the game in Italy and perhaps beyond. So what did Sacchi do?
In a nutshell, tactically, he... introduced certain concepts. In Italy, everybody played with a sweeper. He moved to a flat back four. Before Pep Guardiola came along, I would argue that he was the last guy to really bring serious tactical innovation around Europe. Some of these elements that I'm about to describe already existed in different coaching schools, but he was really the first to bring it all together. So it was a flat back four, no sweeper, generally a high defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
The distance between sort of the last defender and the first attacker was always had to be really, really short.
So you were 25 meters?
Something like that. You were creating density, and he pressed. And obviously we see teams that press high today that the innovation with his pressing was that he had all these different types of pressing, depending on the area of the pitch, depending on the opponent, depending on the situation, depending on, you know, what he would call from the sidelines. And that was something which... Again, pressing existed before, high lines existed before, but he was the first guy to bring it all together. And I think his other real genius in this was that Milan very quickly assembled an outrageously gifted group of players, paid them enormous amounts of money. He was able to persuade them to buy into his system from day one, and he got them to go and just absolutely work their rear end off. This is lost because he seems like a sort of a tactical nerd, but he was also a tremendous, tremendous motivator, especially in the earlier part of his career. And getting people, skill player millionaires, who weren't used to doing this type of work and didn't do this type of work at other stars because you had water carriers who did it for him, that was huge. And there's a whole range of anecdotes related to him, which I'm sure we've all heard. James, you can feel free to relate some of them.
Well, I mean, I think, again, context is important here because he was cast as a heretic. His ideology was complete opposite of what was convention in Italy.
Actually, the quote I was going to mention is where he says that Italy had a defensive culture, not just in football, because for centuries everybody had invaded us. So that's why the mindset was like that.
And the most influential columnist, who was in many respects more than a sports writer, Gianni Brera, had a big part to play in shaping this ideology of what Italian football, in his opinion, should be and how the teams should play. And he went completely against that, you know. And Sacchi, again, loves complimenting himself, loves comparing himself with the likes of Giordano Bruno, who's the heretic burned by the church, Galileo as well, as the guy who completely flipped things on their head and did things differently, where it was very much kind of Italian football had all these top players, the best in the world, and yet their teams did not take the initiative. They did not play what he thinks is good football. Instead, they would back off, look to counter, and look to win games by improvising or with an individual piece of skill. And that completely went against everything that Arrigo Sacchi was about. And to kind of put that first Scudetto into some perspective as well, they didn't have the three Dutchmen, all of them, in that season. They bought Hullet and Van Basten, but Van Basten had started and finished only three games. And as Gab was saying, in terms of getting the team to buy into his ideas, he also got the club to buy into his ideas as well by basically saying, look, I want Angelo Colombo. And the club were like, well, he's just been relegated with Udinese. Why do you want this midfield player? We can get you a much more glamorous, sexy signing than that. I want Carlo Ancelotti. And Berlusconi's like, well, Ancelotti's knees are gone. He's lost 20% mobility. And again, this is very much Sacchi's idea that, again, one of the famous quotes he says is, Michelangelo did not paint with his hands. He painted with his mind. It's all about the idea, executing that idea. And Ancelotti had the intellect to be a Milan player. But you just look at Berlusconi and Milan in that time, Berlusconi's businesses, how his approach was completely different. Yeah, Milan would have like a convention before every season where everyone would get together in a villa outside the Lake Como, and they would plan everything. The club was very strong behind Arrigo Sacchi. As we saw the first season, there were some pressure points. They go out the cup, UEFA Cup, to Espanyol.
I mean, they were in relegation form at the start of the season, essentially.
But it wasn't just his ideas. From a tactical point of view, they brought in psychologists like Bruno De Michelis to train the players mentally to cope with certain situations, etc., like that. All these little things which were extremely innovative and different at the time, a completely new approach to, not only to playing but running, I think, a football club.
This is a tremendous story which Sacchi loves telling over and over again, but what was just true was this was in his second season when they played Real Madrid in the semi-final.
Right.
And Real Madrid sent a scout to go and watch him. A little bit like Marcelo Bielsa years later, but yeah. But of course, you know, in Italy, even back then, we were a lot more grown up than some of the losers here. Sacchi did this thing where for 45 minutes, he lined up his team, his starting 11. There was no opposition. And Sacchi said, I am the ball. And all they had to do was position themselves and run around the pitch according to where the ball was. He's watching this and he said, like, you know, it's like they're insane. It's like I saw 11 people playing an actual football match against nobody with Sacchi running around the pitch screaming and all of them reacting to it.
With his megaphone.
His head, which looked a little bit, to be fair, like a ball. Well, it may have been crazy, but my goodness, it worked.
Ecco Donadoni che ha ricevuto da Tassotti, parte il suo tiro ed è gol! Buio e non mi è parso nella sua serata migliore stasera.
1-1 it had been at the Bernabeu with that classic Sacchi Milan high line, catching Sanchez and Butragueño offside 25 times in the course of the game. Boom. And then they came to San Siro and it was 5-0. They destroyed Real Madrid 5-0.
They were 5-0 up after an hour. If you look at some of the goals, I mentioned Ancelotti, who Berlusconi doubted for mobility reasons. He skips past two players and scores from, 35 yards to open the scoring for Milan that night. It seems to be something that, you know, these genuinely great teams, and I say there are three of them, the Ajax in the 70s, Milan in the 80s, and Pep's Barcelona, certainly the latter two established their legend by beating Real Madrid 5-0. But, you know, I think that was very much the memorable European game that Milan side had.
Mm. There was also the 4-0 in the final that year in Barcelona, and those amazing scenes at the Nou Camp with 100,000 fans there as they beat Stauber 4-0.
Yeah, and Stauber had won the European Cup, what, 3 years earlier, beating Terry Venables' Barcelona. I think the third goal was all about the three Dutchmen. No? There's right guard lifts it into the box, Hullet nods it down, and Van Basten finishes. And, you know, that's, I suppose, that and the incredible defence that, to some extent, Sacchi inherited, the two things that you really associate that Milan side with.
You know, people talk about sort of coaching trees in the NFL, the number of people who went on, you know, Frank Rijkaard went on to win the European Cup before kind of losing it. Van Basten obviously went on to manage Holland. Hullet won the FA Cup. Donadoni managed Italy. Carlo Ancelotti, enough said.
Well, also,
it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of direct descendants, I suppose, players who played under him, but then you look at the guys he influenced. We've already mentioned Sally. I remember when Dortmund played Napoli in the Champions League group stages, and Klopp was interviewed afterwards, and Mediaset put a mic in front of him, and he realised that Arrigo Sacchi was in the studio. Klopp, it was like Christmas Day for him.
Everything I am as a coach, my former coach Wolfgang Frank, and he took it off him, and we knew if Arrigo Sacchi can do what he did with Maldini, Baresi, Albertini, and all these guys, then we can do the same. Okay, not so good, but tactical discipline, it's no problem. If they can do it, we can do it. And so my team is 10% of the team of Arrigo Sacchi.
Jurgen Klopp there, and in Italy, of course, a whole generation of disciples, as they were known, of Sacchi, from Carlo Ancelotti downwards. Although he subsequently renounced some of the tenets of high Sacchism.
He certainly has, and we talked about. But what is incredible, a few years ago, was I did a documentary about the great Milan side, and it was me, Ancelotti, and Arrigo Sacchi, and Sacchi is not particularly warm person. He tries to be, and he motivates and stuff, but, you know, he's not. Ancelotti, personality-wise, as you can imagine, is the opposite. But seeing him in the studio, and we played out clips and stuff, and Ancelotti got emotional and started crying. And I can see myself, like, so many years later, and, like, he started crying. He was, like, hugging Sacchi, who, you know, was sort of, like, smiling contentedly. But it got me thinking, like, you know, you, I don't want to say he's like a cult, but like at that time,
yeah,
he really had all these massive personalities eating out of their hands. And yet still afterwards, they went out and they beat their own path. I'm going to draw a parallel that might make me unpopular with some, but others have raised this. Obviously, the relationship Sir Alex Ferguson had with all his tremendous players at Manchester United was incredible and so on. They were all on board with him then. And when they left, it didn't all necessarily, from what we've seen thus far, plow their own paths.
Right.
They all kind of aped back what he gave them. And I think one of the big things that Sacchi actually taught people wasn't just to do things his way, but that you needed to question things and rip things up when you felt strong enough to do it.
Mm. Let's just have a little look back at what he counts as his most emotional memories. One, of course, is that incredible 5-0 against Real Madrid. He also looks back with enormous affection on the 3-2 win down at the San Paolo at the end of that first season when they won the title, which is a kind of slightly, in my mind at least, there's a bit of an asterisk there.
Yes,
because of
there's a big asterisk.
Because of what Diego Armando Maradona's bodyguard said about the real reason that Napoli, who were so much in control of that season, let the title
reason
slip.
Reason to watch Asif Kapadia's upcoming Maradona documentary.
Okay,
cause
all right.
That is touched upon. But what I would say also about that, because it brings us nicely onto Berlusconi again, was he imposed a sex ban towards the end of
the
end of that season. Yeah. And of all the people to impose a sex ban as well. I don't know whether...
It's more for him, I think.
But yeah, what did Hullett say?
So
James?
Hullett said, he said, I want you to go... So this Berlusconi says, Buonasera, I want you to go without sex for the next month just so we can really focus and be mentally, but also physically at 100%. And Hullett said, I can't run with my balls full. So I don't know what the outcome of that was.
Watch the... can't remember which goal it is in that game, but it's one that Hullett sets up for Van Basten.
Is he very bow-legged at the time? Or
No, quite the opposite. He runs like the wind. I mean, you see how quick he was, how powerful he was. He runs maybe 25, 30 yards with the ball and goes past two defenders and then essentially puts it on the plate for Van Basten. Mm. And particularly that first season, Hullett was massive for them. Tiro e palo da parte di Van Basten. Il pallone non ci sembra che sia andato in rete, invece è entrato in rete. È stato Van Basten che ha messo il pallone in rete sul cross di Gullit.
Another special moment for Rigo Sacchi from his scrapbook came in 1991 when he had his last game in charge of Milan at San Siro. 83,000 were there chanting his name as he came out into the field. Curiously, the game was against Parma and it finished 0-0. But it does bring the question round, why did it end so quickly? The story always goes back to Van Basten going to Berlusconi and saying either he goes or I go, that the team had had enough of Sacchi's intense methods.
You remember those teams, and the conventional wisdom was that they can only do this so often because it was so physically demanding, it was so mentally stressful that they couldn't go and play at those levels in the European Cup and in the league at the same time. It was just simply not possible. And when you dial it down 10% with Sacchi, it stops working. And that was one of the big issues. That's when Donadoni became really, really important. Because what would happen was when they didn't have the crazy all-out press and whatever, then other teams would just go and park the bus and...
He could triple pass them and...
Yeah, unless you had Donadoni unlocking things one-on-one, they weren't going to do anything. That was a big, big issue for them.
4 seasons, 8 trophies. So it was a pretty special time and knocking off the biggest names in Europe on the way to those back-to-back European Cups. Berlusconi then, how did that work? He basically managed to talk the Italian FA into taking on Sacchi on an absolutely massive contract at the time. It was something like $3 million a year, and this is 1991.
Yeah, I think it was 3 or 4 times what Azzelio Vicini was earning. And
So Berlusconi effectively just got him out by saying, oh, I'm going to give you a promotion to the national
side.
Well,
the interesting thing is that Berlusconi was afraid that Sacchi, who basically signed contracts on a one-year basis, a bit like Pep Guardiola did when he was at Barcelona, there was this sense that Juventus really wanted him. And so in order to kind of ward him off signing for Juve, he kept Sacchi on the payroll because Sacchi initially went on sabbatical. His intention was to take over the national team, but do it after the European Championships in 1992. The problem was Italy did not qualify for the European Championships, and Sacchi ended up taking the job earlier than expected, and Berlusconi then stopped paying him. But this was going to become a problem when Berlusconi sceso in campo, got into politics, because Sacchi was seen as Berlusconi's man, and a lot of the left-wing, well, this is Sacchi's theory, a lot of the left-wing papers, they thought they could score points against Berlusconi by basically criticising
Sacchi.
That's Sacchi's view.
Right, OK, we'll touch on this. Next up, then, let's talk about Sacchi, says Yuri. Campionato di calcio italiano. You're listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show. Sacchi cites 2 moments from his Italy career, which lasted from 1991 to 1996, among those kind of specialist bits. And they're both from USA 94. One is Baggio scoring against Nigeria at the last minute. Sì, gol 2-1 per noi al dodicesimo del primo tempo supplementare. And also Sacchi, the embrace he had with Franco Baresi after Baresi had missed that penalty in the shootout in the World Cup final against Brazil, Italy, of course, under Sacchi, famously coming within one penalty kick of the biggest prize of all. The thing is, though, that makes it sound like he was a success, but that World Cup, there was this strong movement in Italy. There was an association of anti-Sacchi people with all sorts of members. There was one very famous footballer, I'm sure he wouldn't like us to mention it now, who publicly said he would be rooting for Brazil in the final, and there were loads of people who felt that way.
Well, he's very open about it. It's
Viali.
Gianluca Viali. Yeah.
Yeah. They couldn't bear, many people couldn't bear the notion, for all they'd love Italy to be successful, of Sacchi getting off the plane with the World Cup with a big, see, I was right all along smile on his face.
I think it was a combination of things. It was, as national team coach, you have to make unpopular choices, which Sacchi did a lot. It was the fact that, you know, he was associated so strongly with Milan. Berlusconi put them there. It was a whole hype machine.
Also the fact that they very rarely played good football. I mean, his Milan were great, but his Italy side weren't.
And you said that was down to the lack of time that he had with the players. Essentially, you look at that Milan team, how much drilling he did with them, the theory as well, because they would have theory sessions, you know, not just video sessions and physical fitness conditioning training. And he just felt that in terms of getting them to play with the rhythm and the intensity that his Milan side did, that was not going to happen. And so he would often make unpopular choices, like playing some of the, I don't know, lesser known Milan players or lesser likes of that side ahead of the likes of, like, Musi ahead of Vierkaward and...
Right. There was a whole list of... I mean, like, Viali didn't get much of a look in. Mancini, famously not. Bergami was ditched. Well, De Zenga, the famous quote about they've killed Spider-Man when he was dropped from the national side. He had 53 matches in charge. He called up 87 players. I mean, that was the thing. Sacchi was at this relentless... There's another quote from him, actually, where he says, there is no art without obsession, which apparently is a quote from an Italian writer and poet called Cesare Pavese. I'm not sure if he was part of your schooling. Mm. But that kind of speaks, I think, a little bit to his method and his continual search for perfecting the Azzurri, which is not what being a Citti, a national team coach, is kind of about.
Yeah, he didn't make the... It's funny because the whole thing... I remember Berlusconi back then. He's never going to do this, right? But he made the point that, because he keeps calling different players and he doesn't have enough time with them, I think he should play the entire Milan team. And obviously we've got foreigners and some other guys who are really good. Like, you know, I'll swap you, you know, Marcel Desailly or whatever. And, you know, we can have somebody else come in from another of equal talent, and we'll do this for a year for the good of the national side, which would have been an incredible
so basically
trend.
Milan would have been the Azzurri, and then that team would have gone off to the World Cup having Milan spent had the entire season.
Exactly. Milan had like six or seven Italian internationals, so it's like, here, I'll give you Van Basten and you give me Mancini for a season. And we'll sort it out.
Maybe not Mancini.
What would Capello do with them, though?
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah, then you'd have to take Arrigo Sacchi as well, because then you have Fabio Capello in charge. But that 1994 World Cup, I think that is when the screws really though started coming out.
Right.
You know, I know it's a cliche, the fine line between obsession and, but really, that's when he found himself sort of just trapped in his own neuroses and obsessions.
Right.
And second-guessing of himself,
right,
which he didn't do before.
And Euro 96, the next tournament, featured one of Italy's best performances under Sacchi in any of that period, with the opening game of the group stage where they beat Russia. Mm. And then Sacchi revolutionised the team just turned the team around for the second game.
Against the Czechs.
Got beat and go out with a Zola missed penalty at Old Trafford. It exited in the group stage, essentially.
Against Germany.
Yeah.
Look, the Czechs and Germany would then later play the final, which is one of his excuses, I suppose. And he loves nothing more than basically saying that he woke the Germans up, even though they were already through, but that they would later say that the best team that they played in the entire tournament was Italy in that final game.
Of the group stage.
Of the group stage.
As you say, things were catching up with him. He had been exhausted by his football as much as of any of his players. He makes a return to Milan, where Berlusconi's famous aversion to Minestri Riscaldati proves to be very accurate. Milan finishing 11th in the league and in a campaign which saw them losing 6-1 at home one Sunday night to Juventus. I was there that day. My goodness, that was got a damn rung. He then goes to Atletico Madrid, somewhat surprisingly, where they finish 13th, and he has a brief spell at Parma. But by this point, the doctors are saying, you can't handle the stress.
Great match, by the way, him and Jesus Gil at Atletico Madrid. Like, you know, that's the Parma thing stands out when you talk about the doctors.
Uh-huh.
I'll never forget. I mean, I watched this on TV. It was a Parma Juventus game where basically Parma probably played better. I don't even remember the result, but I know Parma lost and Juventus probably got a controversial penalty later. I'm guessing. Maybe not, maybe not. But that's how evidently how Sacchi saw it as one of the great injustices. And I remember Antonio Giraudo, who was a Juventus executive at the time. And
one of the famous triad.
Huh? One of the, yes, the unholy trinity who would go down. He's standing there, you know, giving an interview to Italian television, talking about Juventus's mental strength, blah, blah, blah. The games last until the final whistle. We never give up. And then you have Sacchi in a tunnel and you can hear him shouting, right? There's these security people, so you can occasionally see his head bobbing out, right? And he's like, Antonio, Antonio! Like, and he's like saying, like, we played better than you. And if you play better, you deserve to win. It's not fair. It's not fair. We won this game. We won this game. Only the result. The result is a lie. Antonio! And he keeps shouting at him. And like, Giannis like turns around and like, you know, the way you would speak to a tantruming child. And at that point, it was obvious that, you know, something had clearly flipped. And it's interesting because now he's a television analyst.
Mm.
And okay, I really hope he's not listening to this. But one of the things about him is when you talk to him, and he does know a lot, and he spends his life on Wisecout and watching games and whatever, but several people in the game have told me that nobody really enjoys speaking to him one-on-one because it always turns into a lecture.
What's Allegri? Allegri can't stand it.
Really?
I mean, there are, what, two or three cases where he just finds it insufferable and tells Sacchi that he feels that way, notwithstanding having respect for him, obviously being a Milan manager as well. But he is very much the high sparrow of and he looks like it, Sacchi. And he has a column in Gazzetta as well as appearing on TV.
Have you ever read it?
Well, it is just always, yeah. He's lecturing.
Yeah, I can't. Every now and then I think, yeah, I should read this. But that's such a shame that a man who hits such highs afterwards seems to live so much in the shadow of it. And it's also, I think, you know, it's probably worth mentioning when we talk about stuff he says on TV, 2015, when he came out with that extraordinary interview, when he said this.
Io non sono razzista, ho avuto Rijkaard, però vedere così tanti giocatori di colore, vedere così tanti stranieri, beh, è un'offesa per il calcio italiano.
I'm not a racist. I had Frank Rijkaard as a player, but to see so many coloured players is an offence to Italian football. Now, I'm sure he said he was misinterpreted, but it's really disappointing to see a man who revolutionised thinking in so many ways be so backward in his attitudes there.
His defence on this, what he came out and he said, was seeing so many foreign players, right? Because this was the era where after the Bosman ruling, everybody would go and bring in 16-year-olds.
And this is
right?
A youth tournament where essentially you're meant to be bringing through the young players of the country.
Exactly. And you could make the argument that, yeah, you know, I mean, just people have had this issue here in England, right? Some Arsenal and Chelsea youth teams have had like 6 or 7 players who, you know, came over at 16 from Holland, whatever. The problem is, that's not what you freaking said.
Yeah.
You said players of color.
Right.
And actually, you didn't even say that. You said something that's less appropriate than that. That is a slap in the face to the thousands of young Italians of color who are born in Italy, who have Italian citizenship, who might be mixed race or not mixed race, who just might be born to, there is such a thing as black Italians, you know. That is the really damaging message he sent. And because we're talking about Arrigo Sacchi, when he went and explained his comments, what a normal person should have done, but this is a lost cause with Sacchi, is say, oh, I misspoke. I meant all these foreigners. Obviously, I don't mean players of African descent, because there's tons of Italians of African descent. Instead, he came back with this, no, I'm not racist because of Frank Rijkaard. And at that point,
the Ron Atkinson gambit. Anyway, had a huge impact on the game. A game that once was defensive, these days certainly isn't. Something, and how about this for a segue, that was proved most emphatically by the most recent round of Serie A matches. 37 goals. We'll touch on those after this. Busy weekend in Serie A, which finished with the big game at the Stadio Olimpico. Lazio all over Juve. Juve heading to their first defeat in the league of the season. Boom, what happened?
Lulic happened, I thought, above all.
Was that the problem?
Well, idiot. You see the guy, right? You know, it's fine. You want to put an arm out, hold right. somebody back. You don't do it in the penalty area against Juventus when the guy's at a full sprint.
Chesney happened as well, though, because Lazio could have been 3-4 up at the end of the yeah. first half.
But I mean, as Gab says, if the ball comes through the Cancelo, he's offside. So it's completely useless foul from Lulic. But I mean, hats off to the way Lazio played. Yeah. I imagine Simone Inzaghi's reaction would be similar to Arrigo Sacchi's after that Parma-Juventus game in terms of how well they played
yeah.
and were it not for Szczesny. And also for some pretty poor finishing, I would say.
Oh, Immobile.
From Immobile. Mm. They could have been 2 or 3 goals up at halftime. I thought Juventus, obviously Bonucci's now going to miss a month. They've just sold Benatia to Qatar. To
but it's okay, because Cáceres is back.
And also, yeah, Cáceres, who's hardly played in 2.5-3 years.
Yeah.
But Di Giglio can play as a centre-back as well. I think this could come back to haunt
all right,
Juventus. And the other thing, James, why they struggled so badly in that match is Bonucci, and when he went off, they lose a playmaker.
Right.
Cancelo didn't start. They haven't got a playmaker. Pjanic, they didn't have a playmaker. Those are the three guys that make that team tick when it comes to building up from the back, or even just like Bonucci balls over the top for Ronaldo and Dybala to volley in.
Right.
I think they looked all at sea. And Chan had not only did he score an own goal, who's the best Lazio finisher, but in front of the defence, he had an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, which is something that Allegri himself last touched on.
I'm not going to say that the Scudetto's wide open, because obviously it isn't, but last four games, yeah. Atalanta, Sampdoria, Lazio, three of those, and Chievo, right? Other than the Chievo game, because any Muppet would do well against Chievo. Three of those four games, Juventus played really, really badly. And I thought we're fortunate
and
to come away with some points.
And yet they're further ahead of Napoli than they've been all season. 11 points now, the gap to Carlo Ancelotti's side. Napoli only managing a 0-0 draw in their clash with Milan. A clash that was then repeated in a far more exciting game. Is that fair? The Coppa Italia quarterfinal?
Yeah, last night.
With Piontek getting his first 2 goals for Milan.
The headline on the front page of Corriere dello Sport today was good, because Gattuso had called him RoboCop, because he only says, voglio fare gol, voglio fare gol. And the headline was RoboCopper.
RoboCopper.
Copper Italia.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. So Simone Inzaghi left less than pleased by events this weekend. His brother Pippo, Gab, he's gone.
I know, sacked from a terrible Bologna side. Joey Saputo, who owns a team, supposedly now going to get more involved. And
he takes press conferences.
Well, you mentioned last week, Gab, that he was looking to shake things up. And
I wonder how he knew.
After they got shaken up by Frosinone, 4-0 at home, and this Frosinone team had been beaten 5-0 by Atalanta in the previous round, it was time for Pippo pop off. And Dusinisa Mihailovic has come back in as manager. Isn't that exciting? They are 3 points from safety. Empoli, the team they need to catch. Their first game, or the first game under Mihailovic, will be this weekend at Inter. Be interesting.
Yeah, it's all club as well.
I mentioned a lot of goals this weekend. Yikes. Of course, Quagliarella was back on the score sheet, which means he's now equaled the all-time record for consecutive game scoring.
Yes, although he did miss one game in that run. So consecutive appearances, I would say.
Oh, right, okay.
But he now has the chance to break the record against
Napoli.
Record held by
Gabriel Batistuta, yeah. So Samp beat Udinese 4-0 at the weekend. Quagliarella involved there. Also, Gabbiadini finding
coming
the
on,
net.
Yeah. First touch, goal, boom.
Bingo. Goals galore elsewhere. The match you were talking about last week, Atalanta-Roma, that proved a quiet affair.
Yeah, damp squib, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Roma 3-0 up just before half-time, and then Atalanta got one back, and wow.
3-2, then they missed a penalty, and then 3-3.
It was extraordinary.
Yeah.
And
Zaniolo,
getting everybody excited.
Yeah.
So James Rodriguez goes and tweets out something about the result. There's a little fire sign in his tweet, which Duvan Zapata came back and he wrote, what did he write? Like something like, so you're on your way here, are you?
This is
Papu Gomez says, you can have my number 10 shirt.
This is the other thing that's happened in the last 48 hours is that Gianluca Di Matteo was reporting this, that Roma put in a bid for Josip Iličić. I mean, clearly paving the way for James to come in to Bergamo, you know.
Can I say something about that?
Yeah.
I mean, Di Matteo is one of the best ones out there, but If I were Atalanta and I wanted to troll Roma and just go and mess with their mind, that's exactly what I would do. Because Roma need Josip Iličić, given their style of play, whatever, as much as they need a hole in the head or as much as they need Javier Pastore, right? So this is exactly like, it's something, I'd love it if it was established that like his source was Atalanta and Iličić's agent, you know.
Yeah, but so James is not coming to Atalanta? Kind of just...
It should be announced today.
Oh, that's amazing news.
He's coming to visit Duván Zapata and they're going to have a big Colombian barbecue and then he's going to go back.
Hey, the Chievo news, Gab, you love this bit. Chievo taking on Fiorentina, both teams in the wrong half of the table. This was an absolute stunner.
Yeah, for the second week running, Fiorentina take the lead and then get reduced to 10 men and look like they've compromised everything. And yet they managed to get, not only just get a result, which they did against Samp, but win this game. And talk about stepping up Federico Chiesa. I mean, he scored twice and he hit the bar as well. Just an incredible performance from him. And also Muriel, again, kicking things off. You know, he scored two on his debut, scored again in this one. Looks like a great January signing for
absolutely. Is Fiorentina slip into the left-hand side of the table?
Finally.
So the situation, and as I mentioned, Juve are 11 points clear of Napoli. Napoli are 8 points clear of Inter, who lost to Torino. And then Inter have a 5-point advantage over all the teams battling for the fourth Champions League spot, who are Milan on 35 points, Roma on 34 points, Sampdoria on 33 points, and then Atalanta and Lazio on 32, with Torino and Fiorentina only 2 points back. Boy, busy.
Yeah, and just quickly on Inter, we should probably mention that, you know, Ivan Perisic, who is Inter's second highest paid player, but who has been stealing money for a long time, including Inter very cleverly gave him a new contract through 2022. You thought Arsenal were stupid with Ozil? You know, they gave Perisic an extra a whole extra year. What does he do? He comes out and he says, I don't want to be here anymore. And this is a guy Spalletti had personally vouched for him, gave us this whole, like he vouched for Nainggolan.
Right.
I feel a little sorry for Spalletti, but I also blame Spalletti for saying, like, these two guys, evidently, they tricked you, and you're too good, you're becoming soft in your old age.
Uh-huh.
Only saving grace for Inter is that there's a grown-up, or a supposed grown-up, at the club now, in the form of Beppe Marotta, who came out, and he basically said, no, I appreciate players might want to leave, and that's fine, but we're going to go and protect our investment. Or the way Spalletti put it, he's like, oh, look, if Perisic wants to leave, he can leave. But he just has to leave a huge pile of money behind. If he can do that, he can leave.
Like, okay, yeah, does this mean that Modric is not going to Inter then?
Oh, just enough with the Modric.
Okay.
Seriously, no, like, all these people, get out. Get out of Inter. Get out these people with the stupid Perisic, the Modric, the stupid Seamiver psycho. How much time and money and nonsense? Oh, he's a World Cup semi-final. He must be good. Like, no, he's not. He's rubbish. You saw him when he was there. He was like the backup to the backup to the backup at Atletico Madrid. Ma basta.
Who are Inter playing this weekend?
Inter playing Sinisa Mihalovic's Bologna.
Oh, right. Sorry. Yeah, you did mention that.
Ago.
I'm sorry. I got so caught up in the excitement.
Exactly.
So, another thing we mentioned was Napoli-Sampdoria. Juve are hosting Parma. That'll be fun. You know, like the good old days when Giraldo and etc. And the match clou of the weekend, the big game, is Roma-Milan in a massive battle for advantages in the race for fourth spot. 11 have announced they've lost the rights to Serie A. That'll now be on Premier Sports. You probably know already, listener, don't you? We'll return next week with more of this kind of thing. I do hope you'll be joining us for that. For now, from Gabriele, from James and myself, it's arrivederci.
You've been listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show. It's a Muddy Knees Media production, and for sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Check out our other football shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audioboom, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.